Jackson, who will be joining us shortly. We're each going to make some opening remarks, about 15 minutes each. Then we'll open up to questions. We don't have all the answers, so we hope that you will join in the discussion with us and give us some of the solutions to some of the points we raised and some of the problems. I'd like to start out by telling you a little true story. In Syracuse, about 2,000 years ago, there was a tyrant who ruled by the name of Galo. I don't know if it's going to work, but we'll try it. Pardon? Okay. Okay, let's... Thank you. Let me start again. In Syracuse about 2,000 years ago, and this is a true story, there's a tyrant by the name of Galo who had bad breath. No one would dare tell him about it because they were afraid of losing their heads. Until it was Lucian, who wrote during the days of the Roman Empire, tells the story in a story called Hermotimus, that one day Galo took up with a foreign woman who didn't know any better. So one day in the bedroom, she told Galo his breath smelled. Well, he got very angry, not at the mistress, but at his wife. So he went home and he told Mrs. Galo, he says, "You've had a lot of opportunities to know I had bad breath. For God's sakes, why didn't you tell me?" To which she innocently replied, "You are the only man I've ever slept with, and therefore I felt that all men smell that way." I tell that story because Mrs. Galo had rather limited perspective of life. And sometimes we in public relations, our worlds too, are very limited. We don't look beyond our campus walls for direction, guidance, professionalism. Let me be specific. My thesis for this talk is, yes, there is room at the top for public relations, but there are a lot of no vacancy signs that are out. Those no vacancy signs are out primarily for two reasons. One, the presidents do not understand public relations or what it can do for the institution. Secondly, we ourselves are not professional enough, in too many cases, to convince them otherwise. How can we change all this? I'd like to open up this session with 4 points of discussion. One, we must work awful hard at educating our presidents about what public relations can do for an institution. Educating presidents is one of our number one challenges. Secondly, we must help presidents to solve their problems. We can't just be a news operation. We must be a total public relations operation, especially as we gear up for the very competitive 1980s. Third, we must focus our efforts on goals. Focus our efforts on goals. We're not on a job to keep busy. We're on a job for more purposeful communications. We've got to try to accomplish something with what we're doing, not just keeping busy. Fourth, and not the least important by any means, we must advance our own professionalism if we're going to be accepted. Let me go briefly into each of these 4 points. First, educating presidents. I got a letter recently from a friend of mine who said that he gets no respect and his president doesn't understand public relations. Sort of the Rodney Dangerfield syndrome. We all have this problem. I've got the problem at Penn State. Every once in a while, when I'm down, I say, "Dr. Oswald really doesn't understand what public relations is all about." It's a refrain we hear many, many times. We must deal with this problem as best we can. I also believe that there are some presidents, not the one up here today, who cannot be educated, frankly, to value public relations. It's almost a hopeless cause, but those are few in number, thank goodness. There was a story about 12 months ago, which appeared that the PR director for the Fort Lauderdale soccer team was dismissed from his job by the new general manager. Does anyone here remember that story? He was dismissed by the general manager because the general manager said he, in effect, could not and was not anticipating negative news stories and trying to keep them out of the newspapers. Well, it's really not our job to try to keep all negative news out of the newspaper. But it is our job to try to anticipate bad news and try to keep it from ending up on the front page and hurting the image of the institution. You must serve as the ears, the ombudsman of the institution in solving problems. At Penn State, and we did it at Georgetown, we have a complaint form. At Georgetown, we call it a complaint form. At Penn State, we call them suggestion forms. It's a difference sometimes between private and public. Very sensitive on policies or anything else, in that matter, state institutions. There was once a saying that if Moses had served in academia, he would have come down from Mount Sinai with 10 guidelines. Well, what we have are guidelines on this complaint form system. We have these complaint forms, and they're throughout the campus at contact points. And any alumnus, any student, visitor has a complaint or a suggestion, he can fill out this form, and he funnels it back to me. And we see that this person gets a response. Most recent example, we had alumni reunions 3 weeks ago. And one of the alumni of our institution filled out a form that came back to me saying, for God's sake, you have thousands of alumni. Why are the bookstores closed on Saturday? When we come back, we'd like to buy these sweatshirts and other stuff to remind us of Penn State. So we funneled it up to the vice president of business. Came back, a very nice, warm, friendly response to the alumnus saying, you're right. We are wrong. We made a mistake. We promise you next year the bookstores will be open. That's how you can serve, really, as the ears and eyes of your institution through complaint forms. We don't have them up here today. There was a mix-up. There should have been copies duplicated and brought to this meeting. But if you'd like to look at one of these forms, please see me after the meeting, and I will send them to you from Penn State. Secondly, help presidents with their problems. Problem solving. That's the difference between a news bureau operator and a PR professional. Solving problems. I was at Penn State, Georgetown. I once called Father Henley, who in a fit of anger, I guess everybody was calling with problems, says, Art, you're like everybody else. You give me problems, you don't give me solutions. So it's a lesson I learned several years ago. And also I found out the president of Las Vegas Industries, when he took over, he had the same problem. He would sit at his desk and people under him would come constantly to him with problems. Until he put these words in about 48-point type right in the center of his desk. DPMPBMA. And when the curious asked him what that meant, he said, don't bring me problems, bring me answers. When you go to your president with a particular problem, or you have employees coming to you, make sure they have some options or some proposals to offer to you, some solutions. You've got to get into the problem-solving business. Example, sitting on the president's staff at Georgetown, this is the time home rule was coming into effect in the District of Columbia. There was a lot of concern on the part of the president's staff about how we can improve relations with the blacks in the District of Columbia. We had almost completely ignored the district government. Why? Because our money was coming from HEW. But now all of a sudden, the District of Columbia, in effect, was going to become our state government. Therefore, Georgetown would have to turn to the district for funds. So they talked about it, but no one offered any solutions. It went on for a long time. And I got back to the office, I got to thinking, we've got to deal with this problem through some communications PR program. So I suggested to the president we establish a community relations committee, which we did. We had faculty, staff, students, alumni serving on that committee. He appointed me chairman. For 2 months, we listened to the people in the District of Columbia telling us what they didn't like about Georgetown, how we can improve our image, and we didn't argue back. Then we spent the last month coming up with some definite proposals. Those proposals are still being developed and implemented at Penn State to improve the relations with District of Columbia. Again, being tuned in, helping the president with problems is very vital. Focus efforts on goals. Focus your efforts on goals. I think we all have two goals in common. One, recruitment of students. Secondly, raising money. But you could identify other goals that are peculiar to your own location. For instance, we have 32,000 students at University Park campus. One of our goals is trying to do what we can to personalize this big environment. And one way we're doing this is through the complaint suggestion forms. We're being responsive to people with complaints. Last year, we held a workshop
We had the telephone people in, personnel people, PR people. Put on a series of three workshops, public contact workshops in effect. Everyone who came in contact with students, visitors, were asked to come to these workshops where we can talk about public relations as everybody's business, how they too could be responsive to people coming to Penn State. The president thought so much of these workshops, he insisted upon introducing each session, which committed him to a large amount of his time. He's very busy. They went over well. I think we had approximately 300 people who attended these workshops. Again, trying to be responsive. And while we're talking about presidents, don't forget, one of our primary roles is to serve as a chickadee. Those of you who study nature will know that in the winter woodlands, when it's devoid of life, the black-capped chickadee is always uplifting the spirits of man with his whistles and calls and so forth. In fact, if you're ever depressed, that's a good place to go in the wintertime and listen to those calls from the birds, especially the black-capped chickadees. Presidents, too, are serving in woodlands or campuses where people are pretty gloomy and doom prevails because enrollments are dipping, finances are dropping off, and so forth. So he's got to be the chickadee on that campus, spreading the joy of optimism. I'm not saying not to be realistic. And his PR person must also, in supporting the president, try to convey realism, but on the same time, be optimistic. Come up with positive programs to reach certain goals and objectives outlined by the president. I'll take a little side note here, then I'll close this off to the final point. Don't wait for your president, your vice president, your deans to hand you those goals. You must identify them yourself. You must identify goals yourself through consulting, reading special reports, talking to your president. Once you identify them, put them down on paper, hand them to your VP, hand them to your president, and say, gee, I think this is what we ought to be focusing our efforts on for the coming year. Do you agree or disagree? Presidents have to take that and circulate it amongst his staff, say, would you like to subtract, add, is your ball on target, off target, and so forth. Now, once you have the president pinned down, then you've got the focus. You're not using a wide-angle lens. All at once, you're using a zoom lens. Your whole operation focuses on what's important for that institution. All ties in problem-solving, goals, and so forth. I'd like to make a final point. Advance your own professionalism. Advance your own professionalism. I was once at a MAD-2 meeting, and a colleague of mine says, if given the chance, all people in education would retreat. All people in education would retreat if given a chance. I don't agree with that. But it does point out a fact of life. It's awful easy to keep doing things the same old way, same old established routine. It's awful hard to change and branch off and pave new roads, serving as a pioneer. That's what we must do as we get into the competitive 80s. How do you advance your own professionalism? You know much about as I do. You come to case conferences, you go to special workshops, you do a lot of reading, you sit down with your colleagues and consult, and et cetera. So I won't get into that. One final point. Don't get depressed when your president doesn't take your advice. Because, believe me, a lot of them don't. But it's a common problem. Clients don't listen to lawyers. Patients don't listen to their doctors. Parishioners don't listen to their priests or their preachers. So don't fold up. You've got to keep being positive, moving ahead, and don't give up and keep offering solutions. I was once at a MAD-2 meeting where we got on a subject like this, and some woman, a young girl, spoke up from one of the small colleges in Western Pennsylvania. She said, what all you all are saying are fine and good. She says, but my president won't even talk to me. I don't think all cases are that hopeless. I don't know if there's any solution to that problem. But if you're really getting down, think of that sign in a California church which says, we do God's work. The pay isn't much, but the fringe benefits are out of this world. Thank you. I've taken my 15 minutes. I'd like to introduce a longtime friend of mine, a person. He's sort of a plan on this committee because I know he's very pro-public relations. He's exhibited well at Wheeling College. You often heard the saying that we're indeed fortunate and blessed to have with us a speaker. Father Curry's case, that's the truth, because he was in a helicopter accident at Newark Airport here maybe 18 months ago. If you recall, 8 people were killed. Father Curry was seriously injured and survived that crash, so we're indeed blessed and fortunate to have him with us. He's come back to do a lot of good work. He was at Georgetown University when I was there, teaching chemistry. He's a graduate of Fordham University. He's been a Jesuit now for 30 years, having entered the Jesuit order in 1950. And he's done a remarkable job. When he went to Wheeling College was sinking. There was a question whether that Jesuit school would survive. Well, it is surviving. Father Curry's been there now. This is his eighth year. Enrollment has increased 75%. Alumni giving, listen to this, has increased 1,300%. And he has raised almost single-handedly $4.3 million for Wheeling College. It's not much money for a big institution, but for Wheeling College, a small enrollment, that's a hell of a lot of cash. So it's indeed a pleasure to have Father Curry on our panel. He's now going to talk to us about the president's point of view on working with public relations. Father Curry.
Thank you very much, Art. Is this acting pretty well? It's a real pleasure to be here, especially following Art Siervo, because whatever I know about public relations is due very much to Art. I had the good fortune while I was teaching chemistry at Georgetown to drop into Art's office every once in a while and learn what you should do with public relations, and I think he's exemplified that not only at Penn State but at Georgetown, West Virginia University. It's interesting when you talk about public relations and the presidency of a college or university today, that the first public relations agency was founded in Boston in 1900, and the first client was Harvard. And the great President Eliot paid this public relations firm the magnificent total of $200 a month, and after 2 years fired him because he didn't think he was getting his money's worth. And I guess there are a lot of presidents who feel that they don't get their money's worth from public relations, and I'm very happy to say that I'm not one of those who feel that way. Our topic today in this panel is there room at the top? In other words, is there or should PR as a profession and as a function be very close to all the decision-making that goes on in a college or university? And my response is a very definite yes. It's very obvious to me, it seems, that good external relations are an integral part of any institution which is in the public service and which is dependent on public goodwill, as we all are today, public and private institutions, large and small. There's definitely a need for public relations input in decision-making, into decision-making at the highest level. And there's very much a need for a public relations director, official, to have easy access to the president and total access to all information on campus. And that person has to have status, enough status to ensure the kind of centrality of the public relations function that we're talking about. Now, you might ask, do I give this answer because that's the expected answer for a panel with this topic or with this question, or do I really mean it? And I can say unequivocally that I do mean it from my own personal experience, from what I've observed at Georgetown when I saw the way Art Siervo operated, and he really had to change the approach to public relations at Georgetown, as I'm sure he's had to do it at Penn State too. As I've seen it serving on a number of boards of directors, how other institutions do it, and most importantly from my own experience at Wheeling College. When I first went to Wheeling, I arrived on campus to find that the public relations director had not been told who the president was because they were afraid he could not keep a confidence from the press. And this was this person was had replaced someone who had resigned because he had been forced to hide information from the press about the closing of a dorm, and an incident which should have been relegated to page 32 somewhere, because they tried to hide it from the press, was on the front page with big headlines. The public relations director, when I arrived, was part-time. He was kind of a fireman, an errand boy to run releases down the media that would be written by someone else. And he enjoyed, as you can suspect, absolutely no confidence with the media. and the exterior image or the external image of the college was very negative, and you had the invisible college sinking into oblivion. Enrollment was gone down about 50% in the previous 3 years, and development was essentially zero, and there was a real Titanic syndrome. Today, I can report that public relations is an essential component of everything that happens at Wheeling College. The public relations director is a member of the executive committee, the people that report directly to the president, and sits in on all key decisions, board meetings, etc. The public relations director has complete access to the president and total access to all college information. And I think the result of that has been that external relations now are very positive. We had a national story which appeared in the Washington Post back in the fall and was syndicated in about 220 papers. Regionally, we have good relationships, good external relations in the urban center near us, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And locally, we're accused of owning the media. So media relations are extremely good. So effective PR, in my experience, works. As Art mentioned, the enrollment situation has been extremely positive. Enrollment has gone up 80 to 100%, depending on whether you use full-time and headcount, et cetera. Development has increased significantly, and the general image of the college is good. Now, the credit for this, I would go back, as I said before, giving a lot of the credit to the person you just heard speak, Art Siervo. As I said, I had the good fortune to learn from him what public relations should do at a college or university. In fact, one of the last things I did before I left Georgetown, I stopped in, got my marching instructions from Art, and I think I was lucky in being able to follow them. I also hired one of Art's staff, she was able to complement the training she had received with Art with her own creativity and initiative. And very importantly, it's obvious that the situation that we inherited was the ideal environment for public relations to make an impact. There's an obvious need for good public relations and an emphasis on that. And as you're also very familiar with, you had to have substance behind the effort. You just couldn't create an image that didn't respond to reality. There was a real symbiotic relationship between what public relations between the kind of external image that the public relations was able to create and the real performance on campus. And I guess very importantly, my own natural inclination. I don't have to be convinced to, I didn't have to be convinced by Art that public relations was important, and I don't feel uptight with the news media, I just firmly believe in candor and total honesty to start with. So that was all in there. So I don't give myself much credit. I just happen to be in a situation where public relations was needed. I think I've got a natural inclination in that direction, and I had a good mentor in Art Siervo. But I would be misleading if I gave the impression that this was all very easy, that it didn't take a lot of convincing on campus, and it certainly didn't follow any textbook pattern where, you know, I came in there with a clear plan, just John Lee, you know, I didn't do my planning as clearly and carefully as he would want us to do. Clear plan with clear execution and no mistakes, et cetera. The initial perceptions of what we tried to do was negative. We were outsiders, moving too fast, too concerned about image. People felt that Wheeling College didn't need public relations. One of the faculty came up to me and said, you know, I think the great thing about Wheeling College is that we should be a mystery to the public. I'm sure you've encountered that attitude yourselves in various forms. Our public relations director was too aggressive, and very pertinent to our theme is the room at the top. She was too close to the president. She was a threat, and a lot of this, I think, was due to the fact that we had a number of relatively weak fellow administrators who were easily threatened by someone who did have initiative and was willing to jump into various vacuums created by the lack of performance of other administrators. There was a lack of clear boundaries and lack of clear responsibilities, and that's always a bad situation, and therefore there were conflicts that developed. And in this whole situation, the public relations director tended to get used up, and I think that's one of the real threats whenever you talk about having the public relations director having close access to the president. there's danger there, and I'll say a little bit more about that later, getting used up. Personally, I didn't restate the role of the public relations carefully enough and strongly enough. I just kind of assumed that people would realize that this is the way it should be. We had a press policy. We implemented a modification of the press policy that Art had developed for Georgetown and he uses at Penn State. We modified that to suit a small private college. But I didn't say often enough or clearly enough why public relations had to have this access to me and why public relations had to have total access to all information on campus and had to be involved in all key decision-making. In a word, I didn't spell out carefully enough why public relations had to have room at the top. And the close relationship with me was seen as a threat to a lot of other people. I can report now that having made a number of administrative changes and having a very strong administrative staff, most of that difficulty has disappeared. The people know from their own experience how public relations is not a threat, but really can develop the external relations of everyone's role on campus. They've seen, they see that the press policy works. We've avoided any of the flaps that we had in the past. People automatically call the public relations office if they're contacted by the press just to see that nobody else is talking on the same issue, so things, there's articulation there. And I've stated, I think, more clearly and more persistently to the various people the important role that public relations has to have. The public relations director herself, after many bloody battles, I think has won the confidence and respect of most of the faculty and staff through kind of patient persuasion, but most importantly, the service role that's been played. They see that if they work with her, something happens much better than if they try to do it on their own. They've seen things like a column in the Washington Post, quality publications, extensive media coverage, good rapport with admissions and development functions of the college, and the whole positive image of the college. So they see it works, and therefore they're not threatened by it as they used to be. And as far as the relationship with the president, I do my best to offer very easy access. Director of Public Relations knows that she just has to pick up the phone if she's got an interview or something of that sort that she needs right away. If at all possible, I will do that. Give her as much time as she needs and availability and total information. There are no this is maybe easier to do on a small college campus than a major university, but I think analogously it can be applied. Total access to information. There are no secrets. So there's a relationship of mutual candor, trust, and loyalty. And very importantly, the Director of Public Relations knows what I like and what I don't like, and so that helps an awful lot. If I had to do it over again, if I was starting from scratch, how would I do it? Well, I think the ideal scenario would be something like this: a very clear statement and restatement of the role of public relations and the clarity of organizational relationships. As I said, I kind of assumed that these things would all fall into their place. I should preface that by saying that I had to learn on the job. I had never had any administrative experience. I came out of a chemistry classroom and research lab, so I had to make a lot of mistakes before I got some experience. So that clear statement and restatement of the role of public relations, and really make sure this role at the top works. Don't let the public relations director get involved in a threatening position. That person needs a lot of patience, tact, and the ability to explain the role at the top. And this is going to be difficult if other administrators, other key administrators, see him or her as a threat, invading turf, a real problem. That person's got to convince people that he or she is not interfering with line responsibility, but really fostering the best possible external dimension of what everyone is doing, every other administrative official. And thirdly, I think it's very important not to let the Director of Public Relations get too involved in too many things. Need for that focus on goals that Art talked about. There's a real danger, especially I suspect in a small private college where everybody's running all over the place 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I think that's especially true of the public relations director. As far as presidents are concerned, I suspect there are no presidents here. That's probably part of our problem. As far as presidents are concerned, I think it's important that we try to hire someone with maturity. It's interesting that our governor in West Virginia, Jay Rockefeller, just hired young gal right out of West Virginia University as his press secretary. And I think when that works, that's fantastic. But I've also seen the negative results of that somebody who hasn't developed a few scars and some other activities, it's going to be pretty difficult for them to function in the real difficult task of public relations, I think. So someone with maturity, creativity, and very importantly, thick skin. Public relations professionals have to be very patient, and I think it's important that they emphasize service role within the institution. In summary, it's obvious to me that the president has to appreciate the importance of public relations, and he has to continually communicate that within the institution and assist the public relations director organizationally and through other support to win the kind of acceptance and respect on campus that's necessary. The president himself or herself has to be available for interviews, contacts, whatever. And the president has to be honest and candid. We've had a number of incidents which I think exemplify that very well. 3 or 4 years ago, we had an unfortunate case of one of our co-eds dying in a residence hall, not a very delicate situation. The first thing I did was call the editor of the newspaper and the news manager of the local TV station and gave them all the information we had and told them as fast as the information came out, they would be the first ones to hear it. Instead of having a huge front page story with all sorts of things, it was buried back on page 32. No deception, but simply the media in town know that they're going to get the first information from us. They're not going to have to look for it. And I think that kind of candor and honesty has really worked in our favor any number of times. Last April, I gave kind of a Dutch uncle talk on campus about campus discipline, and we invited the press to attend. And instead of having a big expose about the crackdown at Wheeling College, we had a lot of positive interviews on television and in the newspaper. Now, it didn't work completely because the headline that appeared in the paper was, the first headline was, "Wheeling College students are intolerable." So but then 3 days later, the editor of the newspaper wrote an editorial apologizing for the headline and explaining what we really had tried to do in the Dutch Uncle talk. So it worked out to our advantage, but we're all gonna get hit with headlines, I'm sure. The public relations director has to work very hard at building understanding within the institution. Can't be status or title conscious, even while realistically demanding enough status to get the job done. The service dimension, as I said, has to be stressed. They're not there trying to compete with other key officials, but try to facilitate and develop the external dimension of everyone's task. The person is serving the total institution and acting as an extension of the president. I think the public relations director has to stress influence rather than power, and the capacity to help everyone and not have power over anyone. And I think both the president and the PR director have to keep an awful lot of patience and a sense of humor, because uptightness only perpetuates whatever problem there is. And both of them together have to project this realistic optimism that Art talked about. You know, everybody's talking doom and gloom in higher education today, and it's obvious that the president and the public relations director have to counter that with realistic optimism that characterizes any healthy institution. And I think that a summary makes for what, at least in our case, has been a successful example of PR having room at the top. And I think it analogously can apply to other kinds of institutions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Father Curry. Our last speaker is Pat Jackson. Society of America. He edits one of the standard publications in the PR field, the PR Reporter, and I'd like a subscription for that. He's also a senior member of the Jackson, Jackson, and Wagner PR consulting firm, in Epping, New Hampshire. He helped to found that firm in 1956. He also has experience in academia. He is an adjunct professor at Boston University School of Public Communications. His firm specializes in
and I quote this, attitude change and reinforcement on significant social issues. It's a pleasure to introduce Pat Jackson.
Those of you who know anything about consulting, of course, realize why we use that phraseology. You see, if you talk like that, you can raise the fees, which is a public relations kind of a technique that I find a little bit lacking in my confreres who practice in colleges and universities. All public relations begins with research, so let me do some. How many of you here are information officers, or think of yourselves perhaps as journalists, maybe even have a little bit of distaste for that awful phrase, public relations? Okay, I won't ask you which of those three you're raising your hand to. I don't want to be too precise in this research. My second question is, how many of you think of yourselves as educators or in higher education first, and as public relations practitioners secondarily? Any of you in that category? Well, that's a fairly positive response, I would say, because the thing I really want to talk to you about is not really whether there is room at the top. It seems to me anybody today who is alive in this world of ours that does not understand the importance, the essentiality of public relations in each and every institution is probably beyond the pale, and I don't want to come and give any talks to them. Rather, I'd like to talk to you about maybe how we get to the top, and possibly what we've done so far, some of us, that has kept us from getting into that position. I think our self-perceptions are probably at the root of the problem, if there is one. Now, maybe many of you are at the top, and I hope you are. But for those of us who may not yet be, I would like to share with you a conference that I just came from out in California to break the seriousness of the meeting at this five-day meeting out on the Monterey Peninsula where it rained all the time. We brought in a psychologist who's been dealing with the major league sports teams and particular individual athletes. So we thought he has a kind of a funny talk. But funnily enough, he made a very serious point to us. He told of his work with these world-class athletes and these championship teams. And then he tried to tell us how you can separate the champ from the also-ran. And when it got right down to it, the point he made to us was that you make your own image. You set it yourself. And he found that the athletes who set out to be champions and who thought of themselves as champions almost inevitably became champions. So I want to talk a little bit about our attitudes toward what we do and how we do it, and whether we can adopt a championship approach, because I think we need it. One of the first things that concerns me, and I hope the program planners aren't in the room, is that when I pick up your lovely book and I see what people in your track are doing, and I have to tell you that phrase institutional relations really blows my mind. I don't know what the hell that is. But if you don't want to call a spade, I don't want to dig into it too much. As I look over what you've been hearing about, it looks to me like you are all information officers, because it's all about dealing with the media and how to do television, stuff that I consider kindergarten in our field. And I think Case has a serious problem of learning the difference between kindergarten and graduate school, and I say that in all love and friendliness because I've probably spoken at 10 of your meetings so far this year, and I think you're a great organization. And God knows the world needs you. But I would like to see you talking about some other subjects. For example, I'd like you to be talking about organization development, OD, one of the greatest assemblants of skills that was ever put together and made for public relations practitioners. I wish you had a session on futurism, on issues anticipation. Please don't call it issues management, which has become popular, because that implies we can manage public issues, and there's just no evidence whatever for that. But we ought to be talking about what's going to happen in 3 to 5 years, not how we react to yesterday's crisis. I wish you were having a session on graphic psychology. Harley Wagner, one of my partners, is a graphic psychologist, and he has evidence which he believes proves rather clearly that at least 60% of all communications interchanges today take place or could take place without any language. There's signs, symbols, colors. That's how we communicate today. I wish that were on your program. I wish you had a session on diplomacy. We need to know, and I mean that sincerely. I see a lot of you looking at me. Maybe I should take a session on diplomacy. But I want you to know I am. I am doing just that. In fact, PRSA, the organization I represent, is setting up a formal course in diplomacy, because we have discovered that the diplomats, since 1400, when they first came into being as a group, have put together a lot of knowledge, among other things. They've learned how to say no and make people like it. Now, I think that's a skill we could all use, and I'd like to see it on your program. I wish also that you were doing something on consensus decision-making, because we truly are and must be in the post-democratic era. Those 51-49% decisions are no decisions at all. That's an invitation to future continuing warfare. And Lord knows our annual elections, or quadriannual elections for president, prove it. It's always, you know, 49.2 to 50.8, and look where it gets us. Well, I think you ought to be looking into that subject also. That was not, by the way, a paid political announcement. And I could go on, but I don't want to just criticize your program. I'm really not doing that. I'm sure that these sessions have been very useful to you and to many others. The only point is, you don't get to the top by giving handouts to the media. In fact, if there's one attitude I wish we could change, it is to stop thinking so much about the media. All the studies show, and there are hundreds, that the media in our society have very little effect on people's ultimate decision-making. Now, that isn't to say the media doesn't have a role. If you're not in the media, you're not on people's agenda for discussion. But if you know anything at all about diffusion process, one of the basic behavioral science bodies of knowledge on which public relations rest, you know that people don't trust their own judgment and that they need to make decisions in concert with other human beings. And the role of the impersonal media is to inform them and to make them aware. And yet I see us far too often expecting the media to do our job for us. The media is a very poor carrier of our messages, and I hope that we can think in other directions. Well, you're probably wondering where I get all these ideas. So let me just share a couple of things with you so you'll know my biases. First of all, our firm does represent institutions in just about every sector of American society, including a number of well-known colleges and universities, names that you would immediately recognize. So I share all the problems that you also face. I'm not just up here giving you a third world lecture. I've been there. In addition to that, however, I've had a chance to talk to a number of public relations professionals across the country for the last 18 months, not only in higher education, but in secondary schools, in the government, in hospitals, in associations, in public interest groups. And I find a problem that we can deal with if we will change our attitude. Here's the problem that I find. I find that society really has decided it wants our skills. And I say that with an absolutely straight face. Wherever I go, I am asked hundreds of times whether I know any good people that can be hired. And I'm talking about today. Budgets may be down, times are tough. I can't tell you. My office will no longer process letters or calls of people wanting to know where can I find some solid public relations help. One of the institutions that I represent has been looking for a vice presidency in your very field. It will be one of the top offices of this large institution. We can't find one, and we have looked under most rocks. I think that that tells us something. I think that that tells us that we have either failed to project what we know, or that maybe we don't know enough.